Well, hello and welcome to Gaming Guru, sponsored by Augustine Casino, the podcast that gives you an insider's perspective as we look behind the scenes in the world of casinos and gaming. In this episode, we're talking about innovations in the gaming world, not only looking at the technology on the casino floor today, but some of the exciting new developments coming in the future. And to help us discover the very latest innovations in gaming, somebody who certainly can give us an inside look into the casino world, the general manager of Augustine Casino, Jeff Bauer. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Before we talk about the future of gaming, let's talk about you.
Okay.
Tell us about your history in the gaming industry and how you get to be the general manager of a place like Augustine.
Yeah, well, it's a long story. I'll try to make it short. I've been in the business now since 1987, so coming up on my 33rd anniversary. I actually started on Cinco de Mayo, 1987, in Harrah's Reno, in Reno, Nevada. I was actually a college student.
Right.
So I was needed a summer job. I found a job board at the university, and they were paying $5.25 an hour for a sports writer, and I thought two things. One, that's a lot of money, which kind of funny to think about today, but back then it seemed like a lot of money to me, and sports writer was right up my alley. I was a journalism major, and I needed a summer job. I knew a lot about sports. This is ideal. I interviewed and found out that the job has nothing to do with being a sports writer. It's about writing bet tickets for the sports book.
Okay.
So that was interesting. I had no idea what that meant, but I went with it, and I thought, well, it's a summer job. I'll just work for 3 months. It'll be fun, and I'll go back to school. And that was 32.5 years ago, and here I am still in my summer job with gray or no hair and lots and lots of years of experience and stories. And so, yeah, it's just been a long time working in the industry. I worked my way up. One of the things that happened to me being a young guy in Nevada, starting out in this business, kind of cutting my teeth, but the thing that I did know was work ethic. And the thing that propelled me forward at the time in the industry was the fact that I showed up for work every day. So in a tourist town, apparently that wasn't always the case. And so every time there would be a opening, I would be the only one standing there who had like perfect attendance and worked all the overtime shifts. And so I ended up getting promoted pretty quickly and was managing at the time about a $35 million sports book at age 23.
Wow.
And so I learned real quickly what all that was about. And I learned, you know, about the business side of gambling and the customer side. And it was really interesting. And to take that next step to your other part of the question was, how do I end up as a GM? Well, in the 90s, maybe the listeners know this, maybe they don't, gaming started to expand from what was once a two-state legal entity, you know, Nevada, New Jersey. It's the only place, when I got in the business, the only place that had casinos or gambling of any kind were those two states, legal gambling.
Right.
And so in the 90s, suddenly you had South Dakota, you had Deadwood with casinos, you had Colorado and the mining town started getting casinos, and then riverboat gambling started to strike the Midwest and the South. And Harrah's, the company I'd been working for at that time for about 7 years, was starting to get involved in opening these casinos. And I went to the corporate office had graduated from college, so I had my journalism degree. So I went as a communications manager to Memphis, Tennessee, where I helped open 8 casinos in 8 different states and started to really learn about the business and how things could be done differently. It wasn't just Nevada and New Jersey anymore, and different locations had different quirks, both from a customer standpoint or a political standpoint or an employee standpoint. So it was really interesting to learn working in, you know, Mississippi, Indiana, North Carolina, Arizona, Washington, Colorado, like all these different states, Louisiana, that had gambling, legalized gambling now, and they were all very different. So I actually learned quickly how casino operations were working, and then worked in all the different areas. And over time, it just became a natural progression for me to start running the show at one of these places. And that's essentially what happened in around 2000. I was general manager, and at the time, probably one of the younger general managers in the business. And now, of course, I'm no longer the youngest guy in the room, one of the oldest usually, but it was certainly a long road to end up here in Southern California, which my family and I chose it here because it's such a beautiful place and it's warm year round, and we were tired of working in cold climates. And so I've been here for 7 years, not going anywhere. Love it.
Well, that was going to be my question is, you know, when you get into that industry, I mean, so many of us know from walking into the casino what it's like. And we, you know, we think about the people that come work there. Oh, well, you're from that area. That's why you work at the casino. And we don't think about people who are in it for a career and may move around. And it makes you wonder, is Las Vegas like the pinnacle? Is that what everybody aspires to? You know, like in radio, might be going to New York or Los Angeles. You know, is that when you set out, when you decided, okay, this is going to be my career, what did you envision? Did you envision, you know, Atlantic City or Vegas? Or was it more about what you would get out of wherever you were working?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting. I sort of followed, it's weird because it's a different industry, but I follow my dad's footsteps. And he was in broadcasting, ironically, in radio. And he kind of carved a niche for himself as a small market broadcasting guru. Mm-hmm. And he's got now 60 years in the business. I kind of did the same thing with gaming, where I felt most comfortable and I can make the biggest impact in a smaller locals type casino. That's not to say I hadn't worked in Vegas and Atlantic City and all those places. I had, and I loved it. And you're right, it's the big leagues. Going to Vegas is like the big leagues, right? Maybe I'm still a minor league player, but I will say that some of the minor leagues, if you will, the Colorados, the Indianas, the Southern Californias, Northern California for that matter, those markets are extraordinarily competitive.
Yeah.
And so you have to really be good and know your stuff to be successful there. Mm-hmm. Whereas you might go to Vegas and a lot of what you find in the big leagues is just people being recycled from place to place. If you've been a GM in Vegas for more than 10 years, you've probably been a GM at three casinos, maybe four.
Wow.
And the average lifespan for a GM is probably 2 years, 3 years. And so being here for 7 years, I feel pretty lucky. I also feel lucky that I was able to choose a destination that I wanted to live and be happy in with my family. And I also get to work for a tribe because California is tribal gaming only, that is very much a family feeling entity in itself. Like we work for a tribe that actually cares about us as human beings. And so it's just fulfilling. That you're right. The employees are 95% locals. They grew up here. They probably never worked or lived anywhere else. And so they are the backbone of Augustine Casino. Some of the management comes in from other places. Myself and a lot of my directors have worked in other places. But one of the things that I'm most proud of is when I can help mentor someone from that ground level who maybe came in here not knowing if they even wanted a career, much like myself.
Right.
And they end up being a director, a senior level vice president, or a general manager someday. That makes me the most proud of anything I ever accomplished. So, you know, there's a few of those stories along the way that that have been successful, and that's what I'm most proud of.
And of course, you know, I would imagine that it's a fun career being in the casino industry because you're around so much interesting, so many interesting things, and so many people who are coming to have fun. It's most people, they go to work, and the people that come to work, they aren't coming there to have fun. They're just coming there to get something done or to buy something or to eat something. But people are walking through your doors, they're there to have a good time.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we're really good at is looking at our customers and realizing, we say this all the time, they're essentially on vacation. Mm-hmm. So think about yourself when you're on vacation. How do you want to be treated? What do you want it to feel like? And even though Augustine per se is not a destination vacation resort, we don't have a hotel, we don't have a showroom. If someone's coming in there for 2 hours, I always say, well, that's 2 hours of vacation for them. They're there to relax. And so we want to take all the stress of the day away from them. We want to make sure we're Johnny on the spot with the cocktail or with the right, you know, the right value on a meal, with the loosest slots, just give them a great experience. And then we are very personable. We, at Augustine, we know all our customers. We know most of them by name. We see them fairly regularly because it's a locals place. And there are customers coming from within a 10-mile radius. And again, that's something that I've chosen to specialize in, is that that kind of atmosphere. But it's also true if you worked at, you know, the Bellagio, you're still, everyone is literally on vacation.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're there for 3 to 7 days and they've got their bags and their kids and whatever, and you're taking care of them. So it's a different type of customer service depending on what kind of casino you're in. But yes, it is a fun atmosphere because of the fact that we're basically entertaining you in our, quote, home or in our, you know, business where you're on vacation and you're there for fun. You're not there to because you have to fix plumbing. You know, you're not there because you have exactly. You go to pick up some you know, groceries. You're there to have some fun, yeah. And it's your entertainment.
Yeah. Well, let's, you know, you've got so much experience, and I know you started in the sports book, and so this is going to be fun because this will be a different look at it from my perspective, seeing it from the other side of the curtain. But let's talk about the sports book. Let's talk about sports betting and how it's evolved and how it's going to continue to evolve. What is it like there at Augustine?
So, you know, sports betting, go back to when I first got in the business. As I said, there was gambling allowed in two states. Sports betting was allowed in one state, Nevada.
Just Nevada.
Like formal sports betting. There was a lottery style of kind of parlay card betting that you could do in Oregon at the time, and I think later Montana. But today, sports betting is legal in now 19 states.
Wow.
And it's going to be legal someday in probably almost every state, mm-hmm. including California. Currently not legal in California, so there's no sports betting at Augustine or anywhere in California mm-hmm. yet. Legal sports betting. Mm-hmm. The future, as I said, is that most states are going to have it, and yeah. and people will be able to bet from their homes in their pajamas on their laptops and that kind of stuff. So, you know, the future of sports betting, because in the last few years it's just exploded. Once the Supreme Court ruled that, you know, it wasn't unconstitutional to allow sports betting, and mm-hmm. kind of had created all these rules back in the 80s that it could you grandfather in Nevada and nobody else can ever have it. Mm. It was kind of an interesting thing. Some of the rules that existed back in my time were you could never take bets on anything happening in Nevada. So if there was ever a professional game happening, right. You couldn't do it. College sports. So UCLA could be playing UNLV in basketball. We couldn't take a bet on it.
Right.
But now that's all off. And Las Vegas is getting Oakland Raiders.
Exactly.
They've got the Las Vegas Knights. So yeah. They have all this professional sports happening in Vegas. Today, totally fine betting on it. And in every other state that has it, those rules went away. So I think the future of sports betting is interesting. And I know before we went on the air, we even talked about esports.
Yeah, which is a rapidly expanding industry. And just like regular sports, I mean, it's something that's based on skill.
Right.
And so you'd imagine that naturally the next step in the progression is going to be, you know, you're going to the casino and you're going to bet on maybe a video game contest or tournament, or maybe eNASCAR, or, you know, some sort of racing or Madden tournament. And I'd imagine that would be something that people are already interested in. I don't know if it's available yet or not.
Well, I don't think it is yet, but I think you're absolutely right that is the future of sports betting. Once you legalize kind of that method of wagering, other countries, you can bet on the Grammys and the Oscars
yeah,
and the presidential
yeah.
race and you can bet on anything there is in other countries. And I think that's the evolution. Some states are actually starting to allow that kind of thing to happen now too. When I was in Nevada back in the 80s and even 90s running sports books and every year since then until now, you couldn't bet on anything that was decided by vote. So in other words, if they were voting on the Oscars,
yeah.
they wouldn't allow, I could never take a bet on the Oscars. Mm-hmm. I could never take a bet on a presidential race. I could never take a bet on anything like that. Although I always found it odd because, for example, we took bets on the Olympics. So we would take bets on, you know, diving. Well, that was basically a vote. Like it was a scoring, like someone said, oh, you know, 8.2.
Yeah.
So there was some of that was gray, but the stuff that was purely like, you know, an actual vote, someone's casting a vote, like we couldn't take a bet. Today, I think that's changing. I think some states are already taking bets on things like the Oscars. Mm-hmm. NASCAR, things, not the esports version of NASCAR, but actual races, golf events, tennis, Olympics, baseball, basketball, football, UFC, boxing, all have been legal betting fodder for years.
Yeah.
But I think the esports version of that, you're absolutely right. Why would that not be? And some of those sports, which I think we learned with UFC versus boxing, because initially UFC, nobody took bets on it. It was just going to be this flash in the pan, and has literally overtaken boxing. Boxing is
really
secondary to UFC or
really
Ultimate Fighting. And now I think esports is becoming so huge that the natural next step for, you know, how do you have revenue streams come out of that sport or that activity is to take bets on it.
Yeah.
You know?
And taking a step back to actual sports, you know, I've noticed that it seems more and more like either newer sports or up-and-coming sports like UFC or like auto racing seem to be embracing betting more. And not only because usually it's, you know, leagues like the NFL or Major League Baseball tries to separate themselves from it because they don't want any idea of impropriety there. But it seems like some of the leagues that are trying to be more aggressive in reaching out to new people are embracing the betting side of things and partnering with betting partners to try and widen their appeal.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball are all going to eventually incorporate sports wagering as mm-hmm. part of the overall experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to end up going to like a Las Vegas Raiders game and be able to bet right at the game, right? Yeah. And that's going to be probably true everywhere eventually. I don't know how long that takes, but I was not ready for how fast it's already kind of expanded nationally. You know, I was one of those people that thought, oh, that's a sacred cow. They'll never allow sports wagering outside of Nevada. And because of the powerhouse of the NCAA and the NFL and all that,
right.
They've all seemed to kind of back off their stance a little bit. And I think that if you really think it through, legalizing something and regulating it is almost always more successful than keeping it in the, you know,
sure.
in the dark alleys. And,
right.
Yeah. I mean, it's true of so many different things. And so I think with sports wagering, they're finding that's true too. And there's revenue streams for states because there's taxation and
sure.
all of that.
Yeah.
And
a lot of those states put those programs to great use and usually will divert that money towards education,
yeah.
which is fantastic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I know in states where I've worked before, like for example, Colorado, any expansion of gaming has always been tied to some cause like secondary education, community college education, or, you know, other things like that that really benefit areas that don't maybe get enough revenue towards them. So someday it could be your bet on the Super Bowl is making teachers' salaries finally more reasonable,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So hopefully there's a positive outcome from it.
And then do you see once we get to that point where it's more widely accepted sports betting, do you see people going to a facility like Augustine or someplace else to place that bet? Or do you see them downloading the Augustine app and you're at the arena and you're saying, oh, I want to place a bet with, you know, my favorite casino on this particular game?
Right. I think that as with, you know, standard brick and mortar gaming, there's going to emerge three or four major companies that are going to buy up everybody and they're going to own the sports betting world. So you're going to bet with William Hill, you're going to bet with Cantor Gaming, or you're going to bet with some other major company. Mm. And little casinos like Augustine probably won't be able to compete in a material way. Mm-hmm. What comes out of that is usually, you know, where you put in a kiosk from William Hill in your casino, and someone can come in and make a wager, but it's a revenue share situation. There's deals that get made with maybe they lease space or they pay you a percentage or whatever. Those deals happen. That's the direction I see sports wagering going. And mm-hmm. yes, you would eventually be able to have your iPad or phone at a game and just make a wager.
Yeah. I mean, you've obviously seen it from the other side of the counter. I would imagine that setting it up an operation like that would be just a massive amount of work to you know, set all of those odds and do all the handicapping.
I used to do it.
Really?
Yeah. For years. And in the old days, I love to say that, in the old days, we actually booked every bet. And by that, I mean, we took the risk. And it was especially true of horse racing, because horse racing now is 100% parimutuel. There's no risk. But if you were a book or a bookie in the old days, in the 80s, 70s, or before, you took on the risk. If a horse was 100-1 at the track, you weren't tied in. You didn't just send your money off to the track. You literally said, I'll give you 100-1. And if that horse wins and nobody else has made any bets and you bet $100 on that horse, I pay you $10,000. And I just lost $10,000 as the casino or the sports book. That's how it used to be. Today, that $100 goes into the parimutuel wheel, lowers the our parimutuel pool, lowers the odds on the horse, and now the horse is 50-1. But there's no risk on the bet taker because basically all the money is paid back to the players or the bettors through that parimutuel determination of odds. And 16% is carved off the top and doled out to anyone who took the bet. So basically, you put a $100 bet down, and I got 16.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially how I think sports betting and support race betting and all, any of that kind of betting is going to be run more like that in the grand scheme of things. There's less risk for the house if that happens, and it still becomes an amenity they can offer their players.
Sure.
But I'm not risking, if the 49ers would have won the Super Bowl, Augustine Casino is not going to lose $1 million.
Right.
We're just going to get our little check for the right. amount of action we took, and everyone's going to get their payouts, and everyone goes home happy. In the old days, we phones used to get ripped out of walls, chairs used to fly past my head when a field goal got missed or something like that, because yeah. we were all sweating. Essentially sweating the money is one of the phrases we use wow. in the industry, where games could be very lopsided. And then when I worked in Northern Nevada, if it was a 49ers game, and back in the day of Joe Montana, when I was there, everybody bet on the 49ers, and it didn't matter how big the point spread was, and the 49ers covered it, and we always lost.
Wow.
And so it's weird that I ended up disliking the 49ers intensely, because it literally affected my
right.
my job on a daily basis in a very real way. So when you would mention 49ers to me for the next 20 years, I'd get this like chill. They were so good.
Having flashbacks.
Hated it, right? It took me 20 years to get over it, and then the last few years, I'm actually kind of a fan.
Well, Jeff, that's all we have time for on this episode of the show. But don't worry, we'll be back again with another episode taking you inside the world of casino and gaming on The Gaming Guru, sponsored by Augustine Casino. If you want to find out more about Jeff and what he's doing at Augustine, you can check them out at augustinecasino.com. We'll see you next time on The Gaming Guru.